else you want to talk about his film? I guess not.
You don't mind, we're just going to talk about San Francisco.
First, a little commercial.
Then you can talk about San Francisco.
I mean, we're from Dayton. We can't combat you. I'll make myself from Toronto or something.
Got home.
The retainer I have from the Chamber of Commerce. Give me a break.
We have that in yours, too.
Yes, and several other little events, too.
Wonderful.
Tell me, the magazine, the book, and the film. Now, how does the book fit in? Was it after, before?
Is there a book? I didn't
know. There's a book that's very different.
Really?
Yes, with many Pearson's lines.
I think what they usually do on those is the screenplay came first. No, first came the magazine author, the Life magazine author. Then Frank Smith, like, and then what most of the companies do now is they put out a paperback on anything.
Yeah, but this is a better book than just a...
I don't even know who wrote it. Who wrote it?
A fellow named Frank Mann, M-A-N-N. And was the names are different. The Joey Boy and Sam are the two guys, and Eddie is the third guy, and he gets stomped by Sam. Now the thing I wanted to ask you, in the book, Sam is a homosexual as well. Was that true in the actual case?
We don't know anything about Sal. It's extraordinary. Because he had no parents. I know the uncle and auntie lived with him. He was up to about the age of 12. He took off at 12. Disappeared, some jail record. And was really taken in by some gays when he was about 17 or 18. He was killed, as you know. And his constant protests about telling him to stop saying two homosexuals, that was true. That was true.
Oh, yeah?
We've got that from the people in the bank, because their tapes were extraordinary. And we don't really know. So as I say, I don't know what the paperback is like. I haven't read it. It came afterwards. It came, because as I say, the companies went out. They put out a paperback on any movie, hoping it'll take off and just help it from the basic.
I have one more question. In the film, there's a lot of qualities that aren't really shown. We're told that he held a gun to Leon's head, that he held a gun to Angie's head, but we're never shown that side of his character. Now, why?
I didn't want to do anything that it tried to sort of quotes around it, psychoanalytically explain him. I didn't think his background really mattered. I don't think his past life mattered. I wanted to do a movie about like people that we consider freaks and the freaks we think they are. No matter how outrageous anyone's behavior is, you can find a source of human connection. Which is why I stuck to the time of the incident, and the only behavior you see is his behavior during the incident. It was a very conscious choice. For myself, I always find it's what I call rubber duckying. I don't believe I'm bored with the climactic scene 5 minutes before the end of the movie where he found out at the age of 2 his rubber ducky wasn't good in his bath, and that's why he is the way he is today. You know, I just don't believe that. I don't believe that about people. I don't think it's one incident. It's complicated. I couldn't explain to you what made Sonny what he is. I just know that something in that story moved me enormously. Sal's death moved me enormously. Bobby, the kid who... ducked out of the robbery as soon as he had to actually handle a gun. Well, I mean, my feeling about that is a guy out of whatever fantasy in his life says, okay, I'm going to participate in a robbery. And the first time he's faced with pointing a gun at somebody, he can't do it. Well, to me, that's a rather glorious fella. And something very moving.
Was but, that true?
Oh, yes. There isn't a made-up thing in that movie. Because it involves real life. Somebody paid for it with their life. John, in real life, is paying for it with a 20-year sentence. And so it was a constant attempt at, number one, not exploiting the sensationalist aspect of it to begin with. Two, to absolutely stick to the truth dramatically, because to try to invent on top of what actually happened is insane. You'd have to be a bad dramatist to try to milk that material, to try to make it even more dramatic. My God, well, how much more can you ask for?
Yeah, but he wasn't Al Pacino. If you had the choice, commercial aside, would you cast an unknown or would you cast Al Pacino?
No, I wouldn't have done that with anybody but Al, because he's the only actor to me who automatically, as soon as he appears, you get a connection with emotion. And it had to be done totally in emotional terms, because I knew I wasn't going to do it in any intellectual terms. And you lock in with Al in the first minute, and that's just something he carries inside of him. And that was critical for it. That was critical for it. At one point, as not only Al, but almost every actor and directors for that matter, you always go through a period when you say yes of, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? There always comes a point where you want to get out. I'm doing a picture next summer. Right now, I'm just totally terrified. I don't know how to do it, and I wish I'd never said yes. And it'll pass, you know, but you always go through that. And at one point, Al went through it on this. And
what is the picture, said
I'm going to be doing Equus.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, you're doing and Al went through one of those on this one. And when he pulled out, I said, well, that does it. Then we don't need a movie.
Well, did he
I wasn't going to do it with another actor.
Did he pull out this to the neck because of fear about his macho body?
No.
He had no reservations about
We went through the same thing on Serpico. You go through it all the time. You go through it on almost every project. And as I say, not just that.
How long did he pull out? For what period of time?
About 2 weeks.
He did, for that long.
But it was very early. I mean, it was 8 months before we began shooting.
How would you like to be directing Bogart slept here?
Suddenly, a lot of some of the reaction to the film initially has been said that since there is the underplaying of a so-called stereotype homosexual, the effeminate kind, that this is a departure. It might be a major advance for the presentation of the homosexual in film. Have you gotten any reaction from Gay Liberation on the image that you're projecting?
No, right? And I don't have to tell you, it was something we thought about. You know, we didn't know what would happen. As far as I know, I mean, certainly among my friends, my gay friends, I think it's marvelous, because there are no stereotypes in it, and there's also no fudging. I mean, Leon is a fag. There's no doubt about it. Bitchy, mean, shallow, not worth the sacrifice that Sonny made for him. Gave out an interview the other day. She gave out an interview the other day, as a matter of fact, announcing she was getting married. And somebody said, well, what about Sonny, who served me 20 years? Well, I never loved him anyway. I told him that. So that I feel good about it because, as I say, it was on a totally human level. As far as I know, from the descriptions we've gotten, as I say, from the tapes and the people who knew him, John wasn't the conventional fag image. He was nothing effeminate. You know, people tend to think in such cliche terms. He's a total working class guy. He's D's, them's, and those. It's not the window dresser image. On the one tape which I heard him speak, I mean, there is no indication of homosexuality whatsoever. We, again, as I say, did follow what we knew.
The
I just wanted to ask you about that. Did you follow the facts?
Well,
let me start with this. I'm not meaning to be picky. I'm just personally curious about this. I looked at our clips on the incident itself, and I noticed a couple of things. But our variants, details are turning out. And I'm just idly curious whether those were dramatic decisions by Pearson or whether they, whether you followed the script, whether you followed the article exactly, and the article is at variance with the newspapers, which of course, as you know, almost certainly to be wrong. Anyway,
and John, given this,
yeah, that's what I was going to do. We were discussing before. It said there were 20, it said that the robbery was 29,000, not 11,000. It said that when Sonny came out of there, John came out of the bank, it didn't, I don't remember if it said the first time, early on, it said he came out of the shotgun. Then it said later it came out of iron that was arguing. And it indicated that the crowds, of course this is just one, you know, the next day article, all the details were right there, but the indication was that the crowds were more ghoulish, like come out and let's have a gunfight, this is a general impression, rather than Attica or like the gay lib forces right on, cheering them, because they're all levels of crowd reaction. I'm wondering if
John, as far as I know, what we did with the crowd really was try to get the essence of what their general line was over the 14 hours. At the beginning, there was that foolish thing. He did turn into an enormous hero to him. I mean, the Attica thing did happen.
It did.
Yes. The first time, by the way, he comes out, he is packing it up. I mean, he's got the gun down by the side when he's holding off.
Not in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah. It's kind of awful.
He's got the right?
Yeah. And then when he goes back in to check with Sal, he says, here, hold my gun. So the second time he comes out, he's about it.
You're right. My apologies. Yeah.
But the thing was, the general line of the crowd is the general line of the movie. Emotionally, basically what happened was tremendous support, which totally eroded when they found out he was homosexual and turned on him. Because it's not only a gay
lib. The support was in fact eroded when they found out.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. That's when they began.
It really began turned on. And in fact, and we had it in, and I just cut it out for time because it wasn't adding anything dramatic. After the gay lib demonstration down there, a riot broke out. A riot broke out. About 8 hard hats started to beat up on the gays. They came out of the corner bar. The crowd was more of a problem to the police than Sonny. Much more. Much more. And then, as you saw, that takeoff to the airport was just vicious. Vicious.
That was another thing I wondered about. In fact, that was the only thing in the whole movie I said.
I don't know how.
That's true. They were actually,
I don't know how.
As far as it got through,
did they break the window?
Huh?
Did they break the window?
No, thank God. But they broke our window. One of the extras were a beer can.
But that really didn't happen.
No, but they were throwing stuff. They were throwing.
When cars got past the line and got next to the limo and yelled at it, in fact,
much longer time. Much longer time. And I was wondering, you see, the whole object in terms of making that movie was, how do we get the emotional essence of the 14 hours? Without exploding, without, as I say, making a white-on-white shirt. there were extraordinary incidents that really took place, which I felt if I used it, would turn it so bizarre that you could never connect. At one point, for instance, at night, Sonny came out of the bank, and some guy walked right through the police line and came up and kissed him full on the mouth. And this was for the benefit of the television. Because the media were exploiting it like that too, though. Just like the incident the other day, they were down there. And I knew that if I use an incident like that, it makes it unrecoverable. But it's so,
what is the word?
Unrecoverable. From a dramatic point of view, that everything that I'm trying to do, which is get to the humanity of it, it's just hopeless. And so I just didn't use it. It was because automatically, obviously, as soon as you decide to make a movie of it, you're making a selection. Simply by which, even though you're sticking to the truth, which truthful incident are you picking? And so all of the choices here were dictated by this essential element to me of looking for the humanity, not exploiting, not falsifying.
Jerry and I both hit on one shot that isn't human. That shot of the gaze where they all look bizarre. Now, why did you do
that? Is that a balance?
Because I don't want to fudge the issue either. I don't want to say, these are folks just like you and me, folks. They ain't folks like you and me. I don't hold that back. Well, I don't marry fellas.
I challenge that, because if you look at some of the gay love marches, some of the photographs of gay love marches, you'll see all kinds.
Absolutely.
You will see people in suits. You will see them in drag. We got the impression, Tony and I both got the impression, that you were going for the more bizarre kind of thing.
That's all.
We're not denying the existence.
That's all it was denying. The freaks showed up.
In other words, this was just, that's based on truth too.
As a matter of fact, one of the guys who came down, because we contacted one of the gay groups, and they staged it. I didn't even stage it. I said, here's what happened. Now, you fellas, go do it. I'm going to have one camera here and one camera here. Do it. That chant of Sunny All The Way, they get it. They pick it up from one of the real signs. That starts scratching like this. That starts bending it over the other way. I mean, to me, a gay can be as extreme as he wants to. Like a straight can be as extreme as he wants to. I don't want to fudge it. It's a constant problem you wrestle with, which is that, to me, that means humanizing, because as soon as you try to tip it over, that perennial problem I remember, for instance, when I was doing Pawnbroker, and I had a murderous time convincing a black actor to play a black heaven. And I kept saying, look, the point is for you to be able to be the same shit as anybody else.
Is this a film as much about media exploitation as about anything else?
Not really. It's a minor part. It's one of the side issues.
Minor part?
I think so. In my own mind.
The Anderson tapes, this following the Anderson tapes?
Well, about 4 years. 4 years.
There's an awful lot of paraphernalia in both of those films.
There sure is. I don't know if you were in New York on Monday.
We saw it in our cities.
What?
The robbery.
And I don't know what the answer to it is. I really don't. What do you do?
What about the street, the Germer file? Is that just the newest street?
Yeah, it got settled the next day. I don't know how.
Is it true that Warner Brothers paid for the sex change operation?
Well, we got a wire report on that, saying that Leon brought suit against as an invasion of her privacy. And do you know about this by any chance?
The way I understand it,
and that she and it was settled out of court.
Yeah, the way I understand it, the basis of it was, yes, I did give the rights, but I was not the same person then as I am now, because I was male.
Is that the basis of it?
That knew yet, if I was that person, since I am this person today, I withdraw my etc. etc. But I didn't want to, you see, in a funny way, the whole point of the gay lib demonstrations is that he's not that either. And he's not any category. He doesn't belong any place.
Also on the social aspect, the montage you used at New York,
What is the mentality behind it? I would take it that the general audience would know just about what you show about New York. Why would you open a film like that? Just to have something to do to...
to absolutely put it in its proper perspective, that what's happening now is ordinary. With nothing exceptional. The whole problem was, how do I find banality and still make it interesting visually? How do I get absolutely neutral, unglamorous,
you can't do
boring,
that. You cannot do that.
And
make a movie.
And just, so it's 30 shots of nothing.
To get back to just a moment to Pacino and his reservations, which was really curious that he wanted out of the project. And you say it wasn't because of the homosexual orientation of the world. What was his feeling?
The same thing you always get, which is a tremendous fear of going into the amount of depth that you know is going to be required. As I say, I'm having it now about Equus.
Who's going to star in that?
I don't know. The boy is set, but I don't know who's going to play.
The boy, no, Thomas Hosey?
No, the original. It always happens to me. I just get a feeling, oh Christ, I thought I knew how to do it. I can't do it. I don't know what to do. Everything I'm thinking about is corny, wrong, bad. And as I say, it passes.
Now, you know stories that have come out about Paul Newman having second thoughts about doing that homosexual thing on front runner because of his very natural image.
I didn't even know he was doing it.
Yeah, he's supposed to be the Bowers and the track
coach,
which is the love of the star. And he was having such reservations, but Pacino was secure enough.
Oh, he said, you thought of anything? I mean,
Was talking about Equus. I'm sorry I didn't get this question in for us, but whether or not there'll be some sort of throwback to the surrealistic thing we did in the with the dream sequences. Because he's generally rather literal in his films.
Now they're from San Francisco. Maybe we are, and maybe we're not.
That's fine. If I could borrow a cigarette,
filter
on filter. Thanks, no, I don't smoke.
Marty, I still have a couple questions left over that might have been, I guess, more germane to Sydney, but I'll ask them anyway with the hopes that you might be able to tell us. There was quite a few minor characterizations in the film, and in a way, there was such a variance of type and characteristic, it was almost Fellini in that gallery effect. And I was wondering, was there a great effort on in-casting the minor roles?
A tremendous effort. It's the same effort we made in Serpico. It's the second time Sydney and I worked together. We were the same way, which was a huge amount of time was spent in casting and refining and making what we thought looked to be the right choices. We stayed away from the Hollywood look. It would have been very easy, and our studio would have gone along with it very, very happily had we cast, say, a marvelous actor like Peter Boyle as Marie. Had we cast Maureen Stapleton as the chief clerk. And that's right on the nose.
Well, her face was so familiar. Why have you seen her?
The girl that played it?
Yeah.
You haven't. You've seen her in one film, and she did a minute scene in a film called Scarecrow.
She must have done this TV or commercial.
No, she's never done television. Never done a commercial.
Yeah, she really did.
So turn it on.
But you know what? She reminded me of she reminded me of somebody who we've also Rosemarie.
Or Sally Kellerman. I got Sally Kellerman.
She's interesting, and that's...
Yes.
She reminded you...
To tell her. I really did.
Sally Kellerman and Rosemarie.
Not me.
One film, and it was Scarecrow. And if you remember the film at all, there was one scene in Scarecrow where Ryan, who is the character played by Pacino, comes back with his box to call his wife, who was in the banana store. You remember? Well, she was the wife, and she was on the television. That's one moment. She's pretty. She's a brilliant actress. Extraordinary actress. She's never done any film other than that, and she's never done any television.
What's are these all stage actors?
These are all stage actors.
From New York.
Yeah, from New York. Well, working in New York, not all of them are from New York.
Why is it that we always get in our press kits more than one picture of the producer?
You get the producer, you have to get the press
kit. I got two pictures of you, but I got 10 pictures of Eli Landau.
We got two. I've only seen Eli.
We were talking to somebody to Sydney about.
But he doesn't put together a press kit. That's exactly the other one.
I was just off.
If he would, he would have gotten 10 pictures. And my kids.
Are there any things you did in the picture that you did do for example, as Sidney said, Pacino was the only one he wouldn't do the film if he didn't do Pacino. We were saying, well, is he big box office or this or that? And he said, no, he's just the guy you had to be. Were there, and you say you didn't take the easy way on Boyle or Stapleton. Are there any things you did do that either because of studio exigencies or because of commercial considerations, whatever that means, because it was easy or because somebody was banging somebody, old lady, or because you...
I think the answer is on the screen. You have not seen most of these people before. And to find actors of this caliber that have not made it yet, other than maybe John Cassell to a certain level, and Sully, and not Sully, and Charlie Durning, you have seen. You've seen them. But other than that, if you look through all the film, actors like Jimmy Broderick, most people have never seen him.
He's more theater than...
But he's theater. These are all theater people.
And Judith Malina.
Judith Malina.
How in the world did you get her?
That was Wendy Hunter. Did you go to bed? We wired her. It was a murderous job getting her to come in. She came in with her husband, with Julian Banger, which is,
Dick Anthony Williams is better known in films, isn't he?
Not really, no. No,
Dick Anthony Williams, the guy who drives.
He was the black driver.
Yes.
Who's, not really. He's known, I think he's known more to black audiences.
Yeah, in black film.
In black film, yeah. And he's just not a known actor. He's an extraordinary actor. He's more a stage actor than he is. He's a great actor.
Let's get back to Malina. What is her attitude toward... Did she get a nice salary? You know, she's been taking off on the capitalistic system for some time. Did she accept the salary? What did she do with it? Is she going to turn it back into the living room?
I don't know. I think possibly that she was knowing a little bit about Judy Malina. I think that she turns, that's one. She's one and the same. The living theater is. So whatever she earns or whatever they earn, it's kind of anything. She's a joy. She's a character.
How much time did you spend in class?
6 to 8 weeks, I think. And that's full time. They'll see almost every actor. We had everybody up for it. And there were many choices that would have been also right for it. And it was just that we were looking for a finest.
Who didn't you get that you wanted?
Nobody.
You didn't? You got everybody that you wanted?
Yes. And you didn't do anything?
No, we didn't compromise. No.
You didn't?
No, not at all. We didn't on certain level, we didn't on this.
What was the budget?
budget was $3.9 million. We came in at $3 million. We came in at half a million dollars.
So you may make it another film, it looks like.
Where's the... where do we say
money? No, where's the main... the main money? I mean, that's a fair amount for... Of course, I don't know.
Well, actually,
the financing, but
right.
It seems like, you know, there's so much footage in the bank, and it would seem not perhaps a $3.5 million film.
It would seem, you know, to me, it would seem to me more like a $4.5 million film. Let me explain why. It would, A, you have a huge lot of people out there. Most people get paid. And most people out there for weeks. We used 500 people for maybe 5 weeks. They have to be there. In other words, you can't just decide the next day to bring them in. And they had to be a continuity. There had to be a look. You saw many of the same faces consistently. The look of the cops around. The minor characters were interwoven there. The look. They were the sameness there. Even the crowds were the same as these. When the detective comes over to try to quiet down the crowd, that whole line there was the same. It was the same every time we shot it. I mean, that's expensive. That's expensive. Building a bank was expensive. A lot cheaper than it would have been had we had to go redo a real bank. We built a set. That bank was a set. We found a warehouse in Brooklyn and constructed a bank within the warehouse and changed the facing of the building and the interior of the bank, which was a replica, detailed replica. All of the walls flew. In other words, we were able to take walls away in 10 minutes so we could bring a camera in there from any angle. The top, from each side, from inside the walls, from any which way. Wow, that's expensive.
Does Pacino get a lot of money, too?
Yes, he sure does.
Was this the first film on the Artist Entertainment?
No, this was the third film.
Third
film.
But this is powered sort of like a versus a director.
Not really, no. It's, we're basically, you know, a production company. We are at this point. First Directors Company, which is a company that did not work, was a group of directors that would somehow work under the same unit, under Paramount's, you know, colors. It just never worked. I mean, it was Peter Bogdanovich and Francis Coppola and what's his name? He did The Exorcist. Billy Friedkin. I mean, they're all great directors, but it's like, it's putting three actors in the same. That's tough. Egos and tastes.
So many films today are only for a regional audience.
Right.
They only succeed in one region. Now, what about this film? This is a New York film.
Now, hopefully it isn't.
Okay.
Hopefully it isn't. I don't think so. It may be. No, I don't think so. We opened very large, very, very big in California, and stunningly in Philadelphia.
Was that in L.A.?
Yeah.
Not in San Francisco.
No. In Los Angeles, in Westwood. Our audiences are not East Side audiences. They are not, as you know, a predominantly sophisticated East Side chic audience. We have a large. The audience is, I'd say, 20% black. It's older, it's younger, it's a wide range.
Right, so, is it 20% black?
20% black here.
But that's still big city, and you have to crack cities like Cincinnati and Dayton
to have success. I'll tell you at the end of October.
This brings me to my question about, certainly talk to us a great at length about the humanistic aspect of the film, but of course, when a crime is committed of this sort, you can always see the suspense thriller aspect. And we were wondering, was there, or at least I was, whether there was a temptation to perhaps cut some of the scenes to heighten the pace of the film so that it would come out more of a thriller with the humanistic things more subliminated, and if you wanted to pick them up, you could.
Sure.
Because the film is long.
Yes, it is.
Now, were you tempted to do a little more editing on it than Tony picked out one scene, for instance, the long drive to the airport. I mean, you know, once you see a freeway from the air, you see it. And it became very Sugarland Express after a while.
And I was surprised D.D. Allen not would allow that kind, but that was a DDL and
shot. Well, that's your director's, your director's prerogative.
Sure, right? I know.
It's a,
I know that.
Here's, a director has a style, he has a pace and he has a tempo. Has, that's in a sense his statement. And that's his concept of what it should have been. Sure, we can cut it down. We can cut the arrival of the airplane down. Most people, it creates a tension. Is it doable? Sure, we can chop a minute out of here. We can chop a minute there. These are very small cuts that you're talking about, trends. And we're afraid to. We're afraid to because the picture, my lines, which I think works. It works with an audience. It works. And when you start tampering with it, you lose the rhythm. And we're afraid to.
Tell me whether you cut something out. This is the last time I'll open your mouth. When Dernien is taken off the case, did that wind up on the cutting room floor?
No.
There's no,
it's never in there.
It's
no.
He just disappears.
It disappears. Yeah.
Brought up one thing that I didn't yet.
But before, you're asking me about what. Well, I think the film basically is two things, which hopefully will work in the hinterlands. Basically, two things. I think it's entertaining. And B, I think it's an intelligent film. And I think on any level that will work. I think so.
I bet there's Christians out there with garbage cans as ears, who don't have garbage cans as ears.
We're talking about the language.
Yes.
That will turn areas off. But in order for Pacino to do the character, he had to be the character. He had to play it that way. I mean, that's how he saw the character. I mean, it wasn't done for any other reason than that's what the character to him would have done.
The words have said. Well, the words were in the script. Was a lot of work.
When the negative positive for eventual sale of television, you just have to chop the head.
Well, no. Actually, we're going to cover this a little better than Serpico was covered on television, who was edited on television. Serpico was just cut to pieces, you know. A lot of the words, a lot of the lines.
It was cabaret.
It was cabaret. We can cover. We can cover with other language. The language in the streets, we can cover with sound. Because we have the advantage of the crowd out there. And there are scenes in there where he's yelling, where he's using four-letter words. But the crowd, we can bring in other sounds. We can drown him out. That's how we will cut the film for television.
You say 20% when black artists, do you attribute that to the Attica angle?
I consider that A, it's an entertaining film, and it's an intelligent film, okay? And it's about a life that the middle and lower middle class does understand. I mean, there's an identification there, you know? Part of it, I think the character of Sonny is a character that they can identify with. I mean, he's a street kid.
I was asking Sydney some nitpicking questions for personal curiosity. I'd like to ask you one thing. And I preface it by saying that to you because I don't want you to think that this is how I'm judging the film. When the airplane pulled up, I thought, dramatic device. Because, I mean,
why do we take that?
10 hours later, right. I mean, they could have gotten it in position. Is that right or wrong?
Dramatically, had the airplane been there, in our opinion, okay, you would have lost something. You would have lost that bit of tension. You had hostages there, and it was, this suddenly became the hostages. It became more of a reality to them that they were going to leave, that they were going to escape. You also had an audience hoping that they would escape. You also had Sal's reaction. You had Sonny's reaction. There was a build there. There was a build there. Had the airplane been there, you would have lost a bit of build. Possibly it took too long for the airplane to get under. That's a question of choice.
No, it's not that. It was just when it pulled up. I mean, even if it was a 3-second scene, if it wasn't the duration of it, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
I mean, the dramatic device, that's what we're talking about.
It's a dramatic, device.
It's something to
make
that.
Because life is boring on the screen.
Yeah, because that's right. Absolutely.
I didn't see anybody go to the bathroom either, but I'm sure people actually go to the bathroom.
If the airplane had suddenly had been there, okay, there was something. There would have been a lack of tension in that. And at that point, we were anxious to close it, to draw the strings as tight as we could. And we needed them advice.
But we know that Sal's going to get shot, and that guy keeps telling him to raise his gun. We know that he's going to get shot.
We know he's going to get shot, but yet there's a hope that he won't do. And interestingly enough, when he does get shot, when you see this, you know, when I've seen it with a regular audience, with theater audience, it's very different than seeing it with friends or people in the business or a reviewing audience. There's almost a yell. There's a tremendous reaction. And they know. It's kind of set up. You know something's going to happen. And the gasp is not when he goes for the gun. The gasp is when he gets shot. And there's a shock. And little things like the arrival of the airplane, little things like keeping the event up, little things like going back and forth to the hostages in the car, you know, builds tension. You're hoping that it doesn't happen as an audience, because by this time you've identified with almost everybody. They're not.
What is your next venture? Your track record as a producer is pretty good.
I'm afraid to go with your name.
Are you producing at this point?
No. Cindy and I are doing another film next year called The Devil Drives. The Devil Drives. D-R-I-V-E-S. Yeah. It's a Fawn Brody biography on Sir Richard Burton. He was an extraordinary man. He was a very contemporary man in a different time. He was the first anthropologist. He was basically, I guess, the first pornographer. He was a great explorer. He was a great soldier. He was an extraordinary man.
Who has that been cast yet?
Sean Connery, probably.
Certainly a departure, isn't it?
A departure. Yeah. It's very interesting. It's a brilliant screenplay written by John Hopkins. In the interim, I will do other. There's a film that I will start this January. A small film, I think it's a very exciting film. In New York, with a director called Richard Sarafian.
He did Man in the Wilderness.
That's right.
I liked it very much. Nobody else did, but I liked it.
What was that?
Man in the Wilderness, and he did
Vanishing Point.
Vanishing Point.
He's a short film. Very visual, very stylish.
What's the name of that film?
The film, well, right now it has a working title called Back Game. S-A-R-A-F-A-N.
Richard C.
Richard C. Richard C. He's an extraordinary director. He's a director that
has
been a long time. He's about ready, I think. He's very visual, very good. I like him a lot.
Hands. Okay.
That's it. That's all they wrote. Thank you.
I have a question. For so many years, you were not only the top quiet star, but you were the only quiet superstar. Now that others are coming up, are you in any sense relieved that you're not the only one of the head of the pyramid there, that others are coming?
I go dancing every night. It's a joy, it's a pleasure, it's a relief. Yes, indeed.
Why, when you say relief, do you feel in some way, not that you should, but did you feel in some way kind of a responsibility as a representative of the...
Both. I felt responsible. I felt that whole representative cloak I was wearing was not altogether unfair. It was not altogether an impractical requirement. It was the way things were at that time. And it had to be done by somebody. And since it had to be done ultimately by someone, whoever was the person, that person was charged with the responsibility of doing it as well as it could be done. Well, at least that was my thinking, and since that was my thinking, it governed my behavior, it governed my attitude towards films, the kind of films I wanted to do, it governed my attitude towards my work, the kind of work, the quality of work. All of those things were germane to that whole persevering through that period, that whole surviving through that period. Naturally, it had to be. I couldn't be cavalier at that time. I was not allowed by myself, nor was I allowed by the circumstances of that time to be cavalier.
This is your third film you've directed before. What?
A Warm December, Uptown Saturday Night. Brother John is a picture I did not direct. It's an idea I had that was made into a film.
Oh, that's when I went to Oroville,
California, right. Brother John.
Did you ever see Nothing But a Man?
Yes.
Now, what do you think about that film? Because I think it's a terrific film. I don't mean to...
Yes, terrific film.
Now, why was it made by white men, and why don't black men make Nothing But a Man?
First of all, Nothing But a Man made no money. Secondly, there are very few black men who have the credentials to get financing necessary to make a film, any film. To get the financing necessary to make a film such as Nothing But a Man is almost impossible, because Nothing But a Man, however gem-like it is and however effective it is as a film, it is not a film that will do very well commercially. And we are at the end of the road. We are forced to consider the commercial nature of a venture, you see.
Always?
Almost always, because longevity depends on it. There aren't very many producers who have... you see, the people you go to for funds, they aren't going to give you $1 million many times if you don't bring back some money. That goes for anything. That goes for coffee makers. That goes for whiskey distillers. That goes for home builders. Now, if Nothing But a Man could be made for a price commensurate with its potential return, then it's good business.
Well, I was confining his talent almost exclusively to directing now.
Yes, he is. And he's a damn good one, too.
What's the line in here? I'm trying to find it, but it describes this as a squeaky clean comedy. It says that.
A squeaky clean comedy. Yeah. It says that in there?
Is that your idea?
It's not as attributed to me, is it?
No, it's just a thing like this. It's written by the studio.
Well, the studio shows such marvelous imagination.
Well, what I'm wondering though is whether you intend this as an antidote to glass exploitation pictures.
No. I meant it to do exactly what it has done to now, which is entertain an awful lot of people with no respect of race or class or sex. I meant it to entertain all the black people in the world, all the white people in the world, not missing all the Spanish people in the world, and certainly bringing in the yellow people. And there was this lovely little niche there for the Eskimos.
And yet you do seem to be, on the one hand, making fun of super flawed types, and on the other hand, really reinforcing the idea of happy families and marriages. It seems to be working.
Well, that is not a conscious effort on my part. That's me. I am now able to make films. Therefore, I make these kinds of films. Do you know what I mean? I would have made these kinds of films 10 years ago. Because as a filmmaker, these films are made by my values. You see, I see people that way. Or I prefer to see people that way. I prefer to see people in healthy ways. Now, I cannot make a picture where I have an unhealthy view of people, but there are guys who can, and they can do them very well.
when you formed the first artist, did each of you make a commitment to make so many films?
Yes, we all committed to 3 films each.
This year,
this is my third.
With
First Artist? Yeah, I'm a founder and I hold stock in the company, but I can't sell because I'm a founder. I don't want to sell it, actually. I will stay with the company because I think it has an enormous potential. Paul's finished his 3 and I finished mine. Steve owes 2, Barbara owes 2, and Dustin Hoffman owes 3. And when they pay up, we'll be good for it.
Do you all get together and lean on Dustin Hoffman?
Well, actually, we've tried to kidnap him several times.
Was For Love of Ivy a film of the type that you say you prefer?
Yeah.
I remember that, and there's a certain... I almost got some of the same feelings from it.
That was my idea.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Sidney, I'd like to return to this idea that we were discussing about the financing of the so-called serious black film. Now, what would be the difference in the theater? It would seem to me that there has been a definitive emergence of the black playwright in theater, and that a lot of these things do get on the off-Broadway stage and the Broadway stage. The Negro Ensemble Company, for instance, the plays of Lonnie Elder. If the theater, as troubled as it can be, can make the serious efforts, why can't film do the same thing? I know you've just explained about the difficulties in financing film, but if it can be done in the theater, I don't really get the difference there.
There is a difference. It is not done in the theater. It is not done in the theater. I think that's mythology. It is done in an aspect of theater that has no relationship to the commercial theater. And that aspect of the American theater is totally subsidized. The NEC was subsidized by Ford Foundation. The NEC could not survive on the strength of its returns at the box office. NEC got to the tune of several hundreds of thousands of dollars annually from the Ford Foundation that allowed it to sustain itself over a number of years and develop some very fine actors. But that's subsidized theater. There is no such thing as subsidized films. And since there is no such thing as subsidized films, the playwright who wants to work in the genre you're speaking of must discipline himself to the economics of the commercial world, theater-wise, film-wise. He has to. In other words, he cannot write an African epic and expect to get financing for $9 million and expect to get financing for it when the potential return on the epic is going to be $4.5 million. There's nowhere, and there is no private concern, or there are no private individuals who are going to give him that kind of money. Muhammad was just made into a film, and the guy who made Muhammad into a film went to private international sources and said, I want to make this film. There are guys like Gaddafi who said, hey, that's a fascinating idea, but then it's important to Gaddafi to have that film made. And Gaddafi gave them all the financing they needed, and they made the picture in his country, and so on. You cannot do it the way the NEC or any subsidized unit did. It's just not possible. Today, the economics of films are such that the smallest movie, well done, is going to cost you $700,000, $800,000 to $1.5 million. That's a lot of money. Now, if your box office return potential is only $500,000 or $1 million, then to the guy to whom you go for that money, who is in the business of lending money for films, he's going to say, I know what the potential return is if this works. And the figures don't make any sense to me. Well, that's a cold, hard fact. And it's going to be the cold, hard fact for some time to come. However, in the meantime, there is nothing wrong with taking the essence of a film like Nothing But a Man, making the same comment, but making it a commercially, not a commercially, making it a popular film. Do you understand what I mean?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
I'll give you an example. Take the picture Serpico.
Okay.
Serpico is about the corruption of the police department in the major, the biggest city in America. But what Lumet did with it, he made it tight, taut, entertaining melodrama, first and foremost. And within the framework of this melodrama, he said all the things necessary to be said. See what I mean?
But can you? But black filmmakers, sorry.
Go ahead.
Black filmmakers haven't done that yet, have they?
Haven't done that yet.
A Serpico.
I'm telling you. I said that's the way to do it. But my point is, be it black or white, the way to do it is to take the ingredient and make it popular. Example, you do a film about intermarriage in America. If you do the film in the year 1967, right? If you do the film realistically, you are going to make an enormously big, charged movie that nobody's going to go see. Understand? Nobody will go see it. But if you make a picture about intimate and you treat it lightly and you let people laugh, and you put Katharine Hepburn in it, and you put Spencer Tracy in it, and you get Sidney Poitier in it, and stuff like that, then it all boils down to his last speech, where he said everything that anybody could ever want to say on the subject. You understand?
Nice. Okay.
Is there any of that in your new text?
Any of what am I?
In statements or
there are so many statements in this picture. The first statement is that black films are not necessarily only meant for black people. The second statement is that black people can laugh at themselves and at the same time invite other people to join them in laughing at themselves. The third statement is that Bill Cosby can be funnier the second time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.